Well, hello, this is Bob Sutherland from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from a goodly number of sources. Going to read some from the not only the Triangle Business Journal, News and Observer's business section for what's left of it. We're going to Reuters, we're going to Bloomberg, and I think that'll be all we can do today. But yesterday, the market was up 91.67 to close at 23,879. S&P was up 10.55 to close at 25,84.96. Gold was up 6.10 to 12.89. And crude oil was up $2.58 a barrel to close at 52.36. Well, Raleigh-Durham has landed a new airline in nonstop flight to Birmingham. Triangle travelers will be able to fly nonstop to Birmingham starting in April after Florida-based VIA Airlines begins flying from Raleigh-Durham for the first time. VIA will offer the only nonstop flights between RDU and Birmingham. The flights will begin April 11 and operate 4 days a week on Sundays, Mondays, Thursdays and Fridays on a 50-seat Embraer ERJ-145 jet. Well, Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell said Friday that he will not resign if asked to do so by President Trump, and further, that he is prepared to be patient in deciding when to raise rates again. Now, both of these messages cheered the stock market investors who had been worried about Trump's repeated attacks on his hand-picked choice to lead the nation's central bank, and also the Fed's seemingly inexorable march to higher rates. There is no preset path for policy, Powell said during an appearance at a conference of economists in Atlanta. With the muted inflation readings we have seen in coming in, we will be patient as we watch to see how the economy evolves. Private economists viewed Powell's comments as a strong signal that the Fed, which in December had projected another 2 rate hikes in 19, may end up deciding to pause hikes for several months. Wall Street, which opened sharply higher after a report showing 312,000 jobs gained in December, surged even higher during Powell's appearance. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was up around 700 points near the close. Of course, I just reported that it did close. Well, let's see. That's another day this week. I apologize for that. The 23,879 was from close of Thursday. Well, while Wall Street took the announcement in stride, investors will be watching to see if the divorce settlement affects Bezos' control of Amazon. So long as the company is growing and returning profits, he'll probably maintain that confidence through a settlement could potentially put a dent in such Bezos side projects as the space exploration company Blue Origin. The announcement came hours before the National Enquirer tabloid newspaper began tweeting that it planned to publish an expose about the split of Bezos and his wife. The Enquirer and the New York Post later reported that Jeff Bezos has been having a relationship with Lauren Sanchez, a former TV anchor and helicopter pilot, and the wife of Hollywood talent agent Patrick Whitesell. The New York Post said Sanchez and Whitesell are separated. Mackenzie Bezos was aware that her husband was dating Sanchez during the separation. That's according to a person close to Bezos who asked not to be named, discussing personal matters. Well, the stock market rally takes a break as bonds rise and oil drops and markets wrap. The new year rally in global equities stalled on Thursday as investors paused to draw breath between, to draw breath following the recent rebound. Oil threatened to post the first drop in 2 weeks. The lack of any concrete details from trade discussions between China and the United States meant there was no fresh catalyst to sustain momentum, and futures for the S&P 500, the Dow, and NASDAQ all declined after the underlying gauges rose 4 straight days. The stocks Europe 600 index erased a chunk of Wednesday's advance. Japanese stocks paced declines across many Asian markets through the MSCI Asia Pacific Index. MSCI Asia Pacific Index was down only marginally. Treasuries rose amid a broad advance in bonds, while the dollar edged higher and the offshore yuan climbed to the strongest since August. West Texas oil dropped around $52 after surging into a bull market this week. The euro struggled for traction after yet more underwhelming economic data, this time from France. Well, Edward Lampert, CEO of Sears Holding Corp., still has a shot. The troubled retailer on Tuesday agreed to consider a revised bid from the company chairman and his hedge fund, ESL Investments. The news came about on the heels of a Tuesday court hearing in White Plains, New York. Lampert and his attorneys confirmed that they will make another push to sway bankruptcy. Judge Robert Drain in the Southern District of New York to give them more time to improve upon their bid. Lampert intends to keep the troubled retailer in business and preserve up to 68,000 jobs. He must also post a $120 million deposit by 4 p.m. Wednesday. Early in the day, Reuters reported that Sears executives were going to ask Drain if the Chicago-based company can proceed with liquidation, seemingly rejecting the $4.4 billion offer that Lampert and ESL made in late December. The bid would have kept 425 Sears stores operating. However, it reportedly contained too many flaws and wasn't enough to appease Sears bankruptcy bankers. Bloomberg reported that a number of shortcomings were found in ESL's late December bid, such as financing and cash gaps, as well as undervaluing inventory. If Sears liquidates, it will result in inventories of tools, appliances, and store fixtures will be sold in fire sales. Sears is now 126 years old. The company filed for bankruptcy protection this past October 15, announcing it would close hundreds of stores and would replace Lampert as the Hoffman Estates Illinois Bank's retailer's chief executive officer. Despite the preponderance of bad news, Sears' media team, especially on Twitter, they're not giving up. Goes on to say, "We would say that as well, but we are marathon runners and we are still running. We may be slowing down, but we are not out of the race just yet. Don't count us out completely. Happy shopping." The media team posted on Twitter yesterday after one user posted that Sears had a good run, I would say, quote unquote. Well, North Carolina's first Wegmans looks to hire 475 employees. Wegmans has begun the process of finding those to staff the grocery chain's new location on Wake Forest Road in Raleigh. That's expected to open in the fall. The store, part of Wegmans' growing footprint in the southeast, is one of five being planned in the Triangle and is on track to be the first to open, according to an announcement from the company. Of the new jobs created at the Wegmans location, 150 will be full-time and a majority will be local hires, according to the company. When complete, the grocery store will total 104,000 square feet and anchor the larger Midtown East Shopping Center being built by Regency Centers. Other tenants at the complex include Salon de Sol, Bella Lifestyle, Club Pilates, Maple Street Biscuit and Cava, a Mediterranean quick-serve restaurant out of Washington. Now, Chris Widmayer, vice president of Regency Centers, didn't immediately return a call for comment, but said last year that the mixed-use development is slated to open next summer. As construction has ramped up at the site, development on adjacent properties has gained steam. In November, Loden Properties and Summit Hospitality Group bought a neighboring parcel for $3.1 million and is working on a six-story Hampton Suites and Inn. They expect it to be complete in the first quarter of 2020. The Wegmans will feature a family-friendly restaurant chain called the Burger Bar, serving of burgers, salads, and sandwiches in addition to beer and wine by the glass. A fifth store was announced in October when Wegmans purchased the property on Wake Forest Road. The grocer will anchor a larger mixed-use development being built by Florida real estate firm Stiles. Job seekers interested in working at the Wake Forest Road location can apply now. The company advises that interested candidates not show up to the active construction site to apply, but rather submit an application online at wegmans.com/Raleigh or call 984-960-5588. Wegmans has a workforce that totals 48,000 people. Well, we mentioned the airlines flying from Raleigh-Durham to Birmingham. Frontier announces 8 new RDU nonstops and announcing 8 of these destinations Monday. Denver-based low-cost carrier Frontier Airlines becomes Raleigh-Durham International Airport's largest airline, at least in terms of destinations offered, with new nonstops to Albany, Albany, New York, Hartford, Connecticut, Islip, New York, Philadelphia, Boston, Tampa, and Jacksonville, Florida, and Columbus, Ohio. Frontier will soon be up to 32 destinations from RDU, and it may not be done. Mr. Daniel Schertz, Senior Vice President of Commercial at Frontier, said, "We continue to look for unserved medium-sized markets for Raleigh. With Monday's announcement, RDU becomes Frontier's fourth biggest market in terms of flight offerings, and as of Monday, its summer schedule has more Frontier flights than any other Frontier-served airport." Schertz goes on to say, "The move builds on our strong performance out of the Northeast. We have the right fare structure for these customers, and the growth and migration profile of the region, there's a heavy Northeast focus in that migration. Jacksonville and Albany in particular are a big deal for RDU as they sit in the number 6 and 7 slots respectively on RDU's unserved destinations by demand list. When they, along with an already announced Southwest Airlines flight for San Jose, California, take off, RDU will have filled 3 of its top 10 unserved markets. Right now, the plan is to continue to contract with ground handlers locally as opposed to installing at an RDU crew base. But Church does say Frontier plans to install a Raleigh manager at RDU in the coming year. We will continue to grow, and that growth has already translated to jobs at RDU through its contractor. Frontier has other route expansion announcements this week, but none of them are as big. Well, Morgan Stanley is set to make millions upon closing of the IBM Red Hat deal. Open source firm Red Hat is responding to a trio of class action complaints related to its proposed $34 billion buyout by IBM, disclosing even more background information in an attempt to squelch shareholder concern about the deal. And that includes how much Morgan Stanley could make in Red Hat's acquisition, which was announced in October. For its financial analysis services, Morgan Stanley has received less than $1 million in total fees so far, the latest proxy notes, but once the deal closes, it will benefit from its ownership of notes and warrants connected to Red Hat's $805 million issuance of convertible notes this year. When IBM closes the deal, Morgan Stanley will receive a payment that's estimated, based on current market conditions, not to exceed $105 million. That's according to the filing. And it's not alone in earning a fat check. Red Hat's consultant, Guggenheim Securities, was paid nearly $1.8 million over the past 2 years for its services as it worked toward a combination deal. Three class action suits, all filed in federal court in Delaware, list Red Hat as a plaintiff. All allege that Red Hat management omitted material information in the proxy statements related to the deal, which the company denies. But to avoid nuisance, a potential expense, and delay, the company decided to provide the additional information voluntarily, it notes in its Friday filing. In addition to how much financial firms have profited from the deal, the proxy clarifies that some of Red Hat's other suitors, of which there are many, didn't sign confidentiality agreements or standstill clauses that could potentially thwart counteroffers. Well, U.S. employers went on a hiring spree in December, adding a surprising 312,000 jobs and providing a dose of reassurance about the economy after a turbulent few months on Wall Street. The job gains reported Friday by the Labor Department came despite a trade war with China, a global slowdown, and a partial government shutdown now entering its third week. The nation's unemployment rate did rise slightly to 3.9% last month, but that too was considered a positive sign, reflecting an increase in Americans beginning to look for work. An average hourly pay improved 3.2% from a year ago. Stocks surged on the news at that time, along with word that the United States and China will hold trade talks next week and comments from Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell that the Fed will be flexible in judging whether to raise interest rates. The Dow Jones Industrial shot up 747 points, or 3.3%, but that was last week. President Trump called the job growth great on Twitter. The torrid hiring in December far outstripped the 180,000 jobs that investors had been anticipating and could help ease fears that the economy's expansion, now in the middle of its 10th year, may be coming to an end. Well, speaking of money, this is an interesting one. A 612-pound bluefin tuna sold for a record $3 million at the first auction of 2019 after Tokyo's famed Tsukiji Market was moved to a new site on the city's waterfront. The winning bid for the prized but threatened species at the pre-dawn auction Saturday was more than double the 2013 annual New York auction. It was paid by Kuyomura Corporation, whose owner, Kiyoshi Kimura, runs the sushi Zenmai chain. A beaming Kimura said he was surprised by the high price of the tuna, but added the quality of the tuna that I bought is the best. Well, I sure hope so for $3 million. Well, this is from the Carolina Journal. Don't think we've had any articles from that. The headline is Chronic Teacher Absenteeism Costs Millions, and the causes are unclear. The North Carolina Department of Public Instruction classifies about one in five teachers as chronically absent. The absenteeism costs North Carolina schools about $17 million a year to pay substitute teachers. That's according to DPI, or the Department of Public Instruction. Thomas Tomberlin, Director of Educator Recruitment and Support at DPI, presented a report on chronic teacher absenteeism to the State Board of Education in December. DPI defines chronic absenteeism as a teacher taking 10 or more non-consecutive 6 days in a school year. For the 2016-17 year, DPI labeled 22,121 out of over 97,000 teachers chronically absent. Put differently, that's 22.6% of teachers considered chronically absent. Tomberlin told SB State Board of Education members that chronic absenteeism appears to correlate with schools scoring low on the annual school report card. Schools with an F grade had a higher percentage of chronically absent teachers than schools with an A or B. Similarly, chronic absenteeism seems to correlate with lower EVAS scores, which are used to measure a teacher's effectiveness. Now, Tabaria Wallace, the 2018 Principal of the Year and advisor and member of the State Education Board, said his high school district was able to reduce absences with policy changes. Wallace said chronic teacher absenteeism was a problem in Craven County until a new policy required teachers to get a doctor's note or provide 60 days notice to take off any Monday, Friday, or day after holiday. After the policy was implemented, teacher absences dropped 40%. Terry Stoops, Vice President for Research and Director of Education Studies at the John Locke Foundation, said the report on chronic teacher absenteeism is a good start, but more information is needed to identify the causes. He goes on to say, until we know why so many teachers are absent, policymakers in particular cannot address the problem. Tomberlin told board members part of the problem may lie with a misunderstanding of the policy. Some local education agencies interpret state extended sick leave policy to allow teachers 20 additional 6 days beyond their accrued 10 6 days. He goes on to say, until we have data that say otherwise, we should assume that the extended absences for legitimate reasons, Stoops said. Excuse me. The question then becomes how teachers and administrators better manage student instruction in the absence of the regular classroom teacher. Well, Wells Fargo's back in the light again. They paid $575 million to settle investigations. They're going to pay that to resolve investigations by all 50 states and Washington, D.C. The investigation into a range of practices, the latest chapter in the bank's long-running legal problems. The deal ends inquiries that began after federal regulators revealed in September of 16 that employees had for years opened millions of unauthorized bank accounts in customers' names. The agreement Friday followed a $65 million settlement between the state of New York and Wells Fargo in October and the bank's settlement of federal charges related to its handling of mortgages and autos. State Treasurer Dale Falwell says a revised Senate Bill 117 would eliminate some costly benefit options and impose forfeiture of retirement benefits for some criminal offenses. He supports the changes, which are intended to protect the underfunded system. He says we have to simplify this plan to make sure money is not leaving the plan that shouldn't. He told a group in on December the 4th, during his monthly, quote, ask me anything, unquote, teleconference with reporters. He goes on to say there are dozens and dozens of different ways that people can buy into the system. The resulting costs far surpass the amount originally calculated to cover a vested state employee through life expectancy. He cited the example of a retiree naming a child as beneficiary of his retirement payments. Doing so extends payouts much further into the future. The extra cost isn't figured into the retirement system's financial obligations, adding to its unfunded liabilities. Retirees also can take back pension benefits they signed away if the child died before them. Well, Samsung feels the sting of slowing global growth. Please forgive me. Samsung expects its quarterly operating profits to fall 29% compared with last year. That's adding to the tech sector's unease about the effect of slowing global economic growth. The announcement from the South Korean computer chip and smartphone giant comes less than a week after a weak outlook from Apple Inc., after Apple jolted markets with their numbers. Samsung said this weak global demand for chips amid a worldwide economic slowdown, while its smartphones are facing stronger competition. The weakening trend follows many record-breaking profit quarters from Samsung. Well, U.S.-China trade talks, they start amid signs of cooling economic growth. Facing a March deadline, talks aimed at ending a trade war between China and the United States, they are underway, with the world's two biggest economies expressing optimism over the potential for progress, but neither indicating its stance has changed. Cooling economic growth in both countries is increasing pressure to reach a settlement. As the talks began Monday at the Chinese Commerce Ministry, Beijing complained about a U.S. warship in what it said were Chinese waters, but it was unclear if that would disrupt the proceedings. Both sides have provided scant information about their discussions. The talks went ahead despite tensions over the arrest of a Chinese tech executive in Canada on U.S. charges related to possible violations of trade sanctions against Iran. The American delegation is led by Deputy U.S. Trade Rep Jeffrey Gerrish and includes agriculture, energy, commerce, treasury, and State Department officials. President Trump imposed tariff increases of up to 25% on $250 billion of Chinese imports over complaints Beijing steals or pressures companies to hand over technology. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you've enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Bob Sutherland, reading for the service. Today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, who have served the community since 1974. They can be reached by dialing 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, triangleradingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138.